Welcome to the Verified Athletics Podcast. Check us out at verifiedathletics.com. You can see we're going to have a new article coming out soon on how to choose the right college program. And if you're an athlete or a parent of an athlete or a high school coach, you got to get on to the Verified watch list. Over 130 college coaches are going there to get their information on high school athletes, contact information, transcripts. If you want to get recruited, it's the place to be. Got to have you there. If you find this content interesting, please share it with your friends and family, high school football players that you know, other people in your community, or just give us a shout out on your social media. Our guest today is Trey Cochran. He is the host of the All Over Pod podcast. He's also the corners coach at Wisconsin Lutheran College, a Division III school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was great. Had a good time getting to know him, talking about his recruiting story, talking about really what it's like and how the Division III recruiting process works and enrollment, retention, a lot of things that I think a lot of athletes and their families don't know about but need to know about. So listen up, enjoy, and here it goes. All right, well, we got Trey Cochran on the podcast from Wisconsin Lutheran College, and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Nate. I really appreciate it.
How are you? I know you guys got a game today. This is Saturday morning. A lot of people might be surprised to hear a coach having time on Saturday morning to go onto a podcast, but believe it or not, I think for most coaches, this is actually the easiest time right before the game.
This probably is for the whole week with all the game planning and practice and film study and stuff that goes on. Right before breakfast is usually your only downtime in the week. So I appreciate you working with my schedule here. I know that you got to get up early on the weekends now too, being a new dad and whatnot. So this actually worked out for the both of us.
Totally. Well, why don't you tell me for a second a little bit about your game today, what we could expect to see from Wisconsin Lutheran or what you guys are doing. And, you know, this will come out after the game goes. So, you know, you don't have to worry about giving away any secrets.
Yeah, definitely. So we're playing Lawrence Tech today from Michigan. One of our games that we have a 1-1 series with. So next year we'll head over and play them. This is the first time we're playing them. They're a newer program. They've only been, I think, around for a few years here. So they've been playing a lot of club teams and different JV teams, I think, in their schedule the last couple of years here. So this will be one of their first games against a Division III team. They've got a lot of good playmakers. We're really excited to play them and start this series with them. And I'm just excited to see how our guys do. It's our home opener today. So you know how that always is with the guys getting jacked up for that and having their fans behind them and their family. So I'm excited to be at home for our first game today. Playing a really good team, but I know our guys are ready to come out and ball.
So they're in Michigan, you guys are in Wisconsin. How far is the average opponent or like the farthest opponent that you guys typically play in a season?
Yeah, so in our non-conference games, we'll typically do a crossover. We actually have a series that we do with the MIAA over in Michigan. So in a week, we'll play a team from that conference over there, which is another Division III conference. And our conference does a crossover with them, and we kind of keep track of our record as a little rivalry series each year. Those games are typically anywhere from a 5 to 7 hour drive. We'll stay overnight for those, and we head over to different states like Michigan. But typically in conference, once we get to in-conference play, which is after the first few games of our season, 3 or 4 games, we are really lucky. We're right in the middle of our conference in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The furthest north we play is about an hour and 20 minutes away, and the furthest south we play is about an hour and 40 minutes away. So our guys get to sleep in their beds every night on a Friday night. We don't have to travel overnight for our conference games, and we don't have to get up too early to travel for them. So we're really in an ideal spot in our conference because we're not having our guys have to travel out of state or from one end of the conference to the next for any of our games, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think that's pretty typical for Division III, especially on the East Coast and in the Midwest. I think it gets a little bit less typical as the farther west you go, as the schools get a bit more spread out.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, great. And so you guys are at home, which means that they did the long drive. So that's an advantage in your guys for you guys this time around.
Right. Yeah, our back-to-back home openers here this week and next week are both against teams out of state. They're coming over to us. It's always a little bit different. I think about, I was actually talking with some of my guys in walkthroughs yesterday saying, oh, I wonder where, you know, Lawrence Tech is doing walkthroughs at and things like that. And the guys go, will they do walkthroughs at our field? And I'll say, you know what? Usually they don't. They find somewhere on the way over to break up the drive and things like that on a Friday afternoon. But with us being in Milwaukee, we're such a larger city than a lot of the schools that we play. A lot of the Division III schools or NIAA schools that we go play are not to say out in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, sometimes they are. They're in the middle of nowhere, so we'll have to stay in the nearest town, maybe 45 minutes or an hour away, and then still have an hour drive that morning on a Saturday, where when teams come and play us in Milwaukee, there's a really big advantage to them coming and playing in a larger city, because they can stay at the hotel that's a 2-minute drive from our stadium and be right in the middle of a conference center and things like that, where they can host a team and we have partnerships with. So I do think about that when we're on the road, is we usually have to figure out our accommodations, and a little bit more effort, I think, is put into that when we're on the road and going to smaller towns versus when they're coming to a larger city like Milwaukee and playing us.
Yeah, well, when I was coaching at Fordham, we were in New York City, and that didn't help them, because usually hotels near us were expensive. They were staying over the bridge in New Jersey. They had to get up early, find a way to get through the traffic. So,
I guess there's a certain size of a big city that becomes a hassle again, right?
Yeah, totally. So, coaching in Milwaukee, you know, it's a bigger city, especially relative to other homes for Division III schools. How does that play out in recruiting? Is that an advantage, a disadvantage? What do you think?
Yeah, Milwaukee's a great city. I actually was an out-of-state kid. I played for Wisconsin Lutheran College. I'm coaching for my alma mater. So I actually remember when parents asked me, hey, Coach Cochran, why did you choose to play here? One of the things I go back to, and really what I can remember, because that's, you know, so long ago type of thing, is driving into the city of Milwaukee and seeing, wow, these are some big buildings. This is familiar to where I'm from, where it's on a lake. I'm from the east side of Michigan, so geographically it kind of looked the same, but there was just so much more going on. And then I realized, well, this is going to produce a lot of opportunity for me with my future career or internships and things like that. So the great thing we have going for us is our campus is in the city of Milwaukee. Half of it's technically in the city of Milwaukee with our address, and the other half of it, in parts of the streets of our campus, are in what we call the village of Wauwatosa. So we're about a 6-minute drive directly west of downtown Milwaukee. We're on one of the main roads, Wisconsin Avenue. If you take that all the way down, you run right into the lakefront and right in the middle of the mecca of all the business districts downtown. But we're in a neighborhood. So it's a good combination of, you get the best of both worlds, we tell our guys. You get the small town feel of a smaller campus. If you're looking at a Division III school, especially a private liberal arts school, chances are you and your family are valuing an education where you're not going to be in a classroom with probably more than 15 people. You're going to have PhDs teaching every one of your classes, not teacher's assistants in large lecture halls. So if you're valuing that, you're probably valuing a smaller, tight-knit campus community, which we have, but we have the resources of a large city right down the road. So it is a really big benefit, I think, in our recruiting for guys, especially if we hit some of those key areas of the majors they're looking for that we have in our greater Milwaukee area.
Well, the town name Wauwatosa has the perfect amount of W's in it for any name of a city from Wisconsin that I've ever heard. It's like, right? That perfect Native American name from Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. You get guys coming out of state, even just from Illinois or the Chicago area, and you start saying Wauwatosa or Waukesha and all these names around, and they kind of look at you like you're talking a different language. So that's always fun. That was definitely something that I even had to get used to coming over from Michigan.
Yeah, well, and then I actually had a question too. Like, you know, I hear the name Wisconsin Lutheran College, and I just wonder, like, how does that impact recruiting? You know, so obviously it must be a Lutheran school. Are you guys, is it like driven to recruit mostly Lutheran, like people that like follow the Lutheran faith, or is it really anyone is welcome, or, you know, how does that play out?
Yeah, definitely. I think our head coach does a great job of explaining this, Dr. Dennis Miller. He started the program just over 20 years ago at Wisconsin Lutheran College. And when they first started the program, and really the college in general at that time, was over 50% of the students were coming from a Lutheran background. We're now at that point with the college, with growth and just adding more athletic programs and things like that, because that's really what recruits a lot of students to these Division III schools, is a chance to play college athletics. We're now at a lot smaller percentage coming from the Lutheran schools or the Lutheran background, plus the Lutheran schools and the churches and just some of those prep schools are actually shrinking in size over the last decade or so. So we're actually going out and we're bringing more students in from a lot of different diverse backgrounds. Now, what we'll say as part of our program is you can be Lutheran, Catholic, Baptist, you know, really any religious denomination in. But what we're going to do, and we tell this to parents in our locker room, is we're going to coach your son with respect as Christian men. So we're not going to cuss them up and down the field. We're going to treat them with the respect that they deserve, coach them well, and they're going to be in a really good atmosphere with great teammates. So our big thing is we love to recruit good human beings. You can play football on the pavement, our coach says, or you can play it on a really nice football field, a nice turf with a big stadium and a lot of fans. But if you're out there with a bunch of guys that you respect and that you trust and love, you're going to have a great time on a Saturday playing games. So Lutheran's in our name. We like to say that we're unapologetically Christian. You know, we're going to treat our guys with Christian values. Our professors have that. They're going to be in a really good atmosphere to live and grow as young men. But you're right. They don't have to be from the Lutheran background. And the majority of our guys actually aren't.
Okay, so there is like a faith-based component to it, though. It does sound like that, you know, at least at the Christian level, that there's some expectation that there's like a Christian values nature to the program in the school. Is that a head coach's choice, or is that just coming down from the top? That's how the school is meant to be.
I think it's both, which is great at our school. It's coming from the top down from, you know, our board or our president even. We have a blessing. Our president of the college, his son is on our football team. Our head coach, it's his motto for our program is faith, family, future. So from the administration to our football head coach, who have great relationships all the way down, that's the mantra, that's the motto, and that's just the feel of the college, which is great. And what that ends up turning into, or what families can feel and guys can feel when they come on campus, and it's really cool. At the beginning of each year, we do character classes in our camp before the season starts. In one of our character classes, we ask the old guys, so our veterans who are sophomores, juniors, and seniors returning to the team, hey, tell these freshmen why you stuck around at WLC, why you chose WLC, but what made you stick around? Because you know in college athletics, especially football teams, retention's a big thing. You want to keep guys on your team so you can build a team for the future. But that's hard to do a lot of times when you're managing 100-plus bodies and guys that are, you know, were the best players in high school and maybe aren't starting right away in their freshman year and things like that. And the guys every time say, man, WLC just felt like home. It felt like a family. I love these guys, et cetera, et cetera. And then I kind of chime in and say, yeah, guys, it's true. It's not going to just be these next 4 years you're going to be close with them. You know, I got married the other summer and everyone standing up at my wedding, I played college football with, and I didn't know until I was here at this camp freshman year. So it's a trickle down thing from the top down, but it actually is real. And the guys see it in their sense of family, community, and all those things that you really want to build on a football team.
Yeah, I've been to weddings like that where every one of the groomsmen are all like, it's like the starting offensive line from, you know, something like that from like the 2007, you know, Princeton Tigers or something like that.
Yep, but that's exactly what it was. Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You kind of touched on a few things there that I wanted to talk to you about. Part of it was retention and part of it was the Division III model. With the way that football plays a role, like a role in the larger school and recruiting a whole student body. And I think a lot of athletes and families probably don't see that dynamic, either one of those dynamics, until, you know, they experience it themselves. But why don't you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. It's actually something that the best thing about WLC and how we recruit is we're extremely transparent about everything we do, from talking to the guys about where we see them fitting in on the team to what their role on our campus is going to be. So we tell parents when they come for their recruiting visits, whether it's a one-on-one meeting or they're coming on a general recruiting day like they might today for a game day visit, we'll say, just so you know, we have high expectations for your son at this school. We're recruiting him because we see that he can be a leader. Servant leadership is one of our mottos at WLC, which has a Christian component to that as well, obviously. And we say your son is going to be one of 100 guys on our campus, and we have roughly 1,000 students, traditional undergrads, on our campus. So he's 10% of the population. And we're super upfront about that and say, you're going to have a large impact on this campus, and there's going to be a lot of eyes on you just from a number standpoint. So you're going to be in classes where you might have a lot of football guys. You're going to be living in a freshman res hall your first year on a floor where most of them might be football guys. Athletes at our campus, almost 50% of our student population are Division III athletes. So we're open about that too, so that parents and families and just the guys can understand this is what you're buying into. This is what you're going to be part of. You're not going to just come here and be a number. You're going to come here and be a large impact to our campus culture and community. And it is a thing right now in Division III athletics where or Division III higher education, where athletics are driving enrollment. And it's something that every school is doing. You can see the amount of dollars that they're pumping into facilities and things like that. We let them know, like, we're going to invest in you. You're a big part to this campus and this college being successful. that's something that you should take pride in and have a lot of fun being part of.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of athletes and parents take a step back and ask themselves, like, why are these schools, like, funding these programs? Like, football teams are expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, in Division III programs, they don't have TV contracts. They're not bringing in gate revenue. They're not covering their expenses. You know, they have to hire coaches. They have to put the whole thing together. Like, why do they do it? And like you said, I think that the answer is that there's some demographics at play, which is, first of all, that more women than men go to college. And way more women than men go to small liberal arts schools. And football, in a lot of ways, can be a balancer where you bring in 100, you know, you talked about it, you have a campus with 1,000 people and you bring in 100 football players, that dramatically shifts the male-female ratio. And because there's a certain point where, you know, women don't want to go to a school that is 80% women. And so you bring in a football team and a baseball team and a soccer team. And, you know, obviously there's women's sports too, but, you know, football is one that has a huge number and doesn't have a female counterpart, where all of a sudden, like, you're really starting to balance out those numbers and can help that school.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Nate. You have a great understanding on it, obviously, from your background and being at that level. Is that's exactly it. In WLC, before the football program started, was predominantly, and it still is, one of the top programs on our campus is education. We produce the best teachers in the state of Wisconsin, from Wisconsin Luther College. And education, on top of, like you were saying, predominantly females are going to smaller liberal arts schools. Education is another industry where you predominantly have females going into to be teachers. And then right next to that is our health sciences, with our nursing program and our location right across the street from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, the Cancer Research Center, basically the mecca of healthcare in Wisconsin is across the street from us. So you have two areas where you predominantly are recruiting females to go work into as a vocation. So you're right, to kind of balance those scales and bring in the demographics that you need to grow a campus community and just make sure that you're having a good mixture. Football is a huge driver along with those other male sports on our campus.
So why don't you take me through, like, the recruiting process, how it works for you guys, how you get from, tell me when, wherever you start, to ultimately how many players you end up with in a typical recruiting class and how that thing goes.
Yeah, definitely. So we have, just like a lot of Division III programs, we have your full-time staff that are on staff that are recruiting year-round, and then you kind of have your guys that you tap into, whether they're on campus working other positions, and their assistant coaches that can manage maybe smaller recruiting territories, and then your graduate assistants. I think one of the big things with Division III programs that probably goes overlooked sometimes is the importance of GAs and graduate assistants, because at a Division III program, and I know ours, they're typically giving a lot more responsibility than they might be given at a D1 Big Ten program, for example, where they might be just doing film there and breaking down plays, and you really have your full-time staff of 10 guys plus your head coach on the road all the time recruiting there. You might only have 3 or 4 full-time guys at the Division III level, still trying to manage just as many guys. So from a football operations standpoint, you have a lot of stuff to do when it comes to equipment and logistics and things like that that takes away from maybe what you would like to do with recruiting. So at WLC, I think we do a really good job of spreading out those responsibilities for our full-time guys, you know, making sure they're recruiting areas that they're familiar with, whether they were playing football there themselves growing up or have experience from their previous coaching times. And then our GAs and where we pull them from across the country as well. So we'll start at the beginning of the year with a large, you know, number of guys that we're interested in. For example, today on our game day visit, we've probably got a handful of guys, maybe only 5 or 6 coming today. But those are guys that have been on our campus already as juniors, or in the summer, that we've had conversations with or have even already applied. So we have relationship with the guys that we're bringing to campus visits, which is a little bit different sometimes than I think some of the Division III schools, where it really is a spray technique where you're going to bring everyone into a net and just kind of see who filters through. Because a lot of these Division III programs are really being used to drive enrollment at these Division III schools. So I'm glad that you asked, you know, how many guys do we typically bring in a recruiting class? Well, it varies every year because some guys, you know, you hit on more guys than you expected. This year, we had a pretty large incoming class for our standards. It was between 45 and 50 incoming freshmen. We've got a roster of about 105 guys. Typically, that number is going to be right around 35 to 40 on an average year. But it was a great recruiting year for us, and kudos to our coaches for bringing in a really solid class. But I think one of the cool things that we do, and we're very transparent with our guys and our families on the front end, is make sure you're looking and asking coaches when you visit, how many guys are you carrying on your roster? How many guys are coming into camp? Because you know, Nate, some programs at the Division III level are going to bring 180 guys into camp. Some are going to gray shirt, even though that's not really a term and thing that you should be doing at the Division III level. They'll gray shirt. You won't really do much your freshman year, and then you have 4 more years of eligibility. And then the guys.
Actually, I want to pause you because, like, I know that means, but I don't think I don't think the average person knows what you mean when you just said gray shirt. They barely even know what the term red shirt means.
Right, right. So a gray shirt, it's technically you're not supposed to do that at Division III level. Is you bring in a guy and you tell him, hey, you're gonna be part of the football team, but not this year. We don't want you to really practice or anything. Just be around, get some workouts in, and then next year you can be on the football team. So those are programs that are bringing in, you know, 100. Well, not bringing in, but they have 150 plus guys that are under their football program, typically a lot larger rosters. We tell our guys we don't gray shirt and we don't red shirt. So unless obviously there's a medical red shirt or a reason, we're not going to sit you your freshman year just because you're a freshman. You're going to come in and we're going to expect you to contribute some way, whether it's pushing on the two deep or special teams or giving us a scout look for half the year. We're going to expect you to contribute because we only keep a roster of right around 100 guys. And you understand with college football, a couple of guys get hurt really quickly. That becomes 80 healthy bodies. And once you're talking about 80 healthy bodies on a football team, you're using almost every one of those every day in practice. So those guys are going to be getting reps and they're going to be getting coached. So we have a strong philosophy that, yeah, football has a recruiting aspect and it's a driver at our college, but we're going to keep it at a spot where we can actually coach our guys, get them experience, because we really do believe the only way you get better at football is playing it. So our guys come in as freshmen, we want them to play right away. And that's another reason we also have a full JV schedule for those guys their freshman year as well.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that gray shirt thing a little bit more because you're probably particularly sensitive to it. It's not something that is actually widespread throughout the country. There is like a specific subset of schools that I know of in particular that hits on those, which are the public Division III schools in Wisconsin. Based on, yeah, like more than any other place in the country. And it's because they have a couple of things going on. Number one, they're good programs. I mean, typically those are like some of the best. When you talk about UW-Whitewater and some of the other ones, like these are the best, some of the best Division III programs in the country. And so they attract a lot of talent. They're relatively cheap schools to go to. So for a lot of athletes, it's the best financial decision. And they also have a strict roster cap limit to how many players they're allowed to have on the roster. I think it's because it's the opposite. A lot of times in state schools, you know, these football programs are not driving enrollment quite in the same way that we talked about the dynamic at the smaller private liberal arts schools. And so they cap their rosters. And so as a result, they want to basically bring in more athletes than they have for their capped roster. And so they'll recruit some of their freshmen and they'll say, you guys are on the roster, and they'll recruit some of them. And sometimes I think more honest and less honest, depending on the program and the coach, on what really their life is going to look like, where they're guaranteed a roster spot in their second year at school. So then they can basically like get a fifth year senior in a way without having to, you know, because Division III doesn't really have a redshirt program and these schools have 100 man roster limits.
Yep, that's exactly it right there. So, you know, in us being in Wisconsin, obviously we're going up against those schools a lot of times in recruiting, maybe more so than other schools from other parts of the country at the Division III level. So it's always something that we're competing against. You know, like you said, the public school tuition rate might be better than a private school. So we have to talk to our guys and say, well, have you talked to your coach about the roster size this year? Are you going to be playing your freshman year? Are you going to be looking at a gray shirt? Because we want our guys just to be equipped with the right questions so that they don't get somewhere and are kind of blindsided by some of that. And that's why we love just being super transparent with our guys through that recruiting process to say, this is where you're at. Here's where our depth chart ended last year. I'm going to keep you updated as the spring ball goes on. If any of you guys get hurt, things like that at your position, so you know exactly where you're coming in at. We even go through and watch some film with our guys on our team from the year before. We send them highlights of our offense or defense so they can kind of see and eyeball up. Well, these are the guys that are going to be ahead of me, or here's where they're at on the roster too, because we just think that if those expectations are set earlier on, our guys are going to come in with a mentality of a little bit maybe more positive if they find themselves not getting a ton of snaps in week 1, and it'll help them stick around and help with our retention as well.
Sure. And you touched on retention again, and this is another thing that I think a lot of athletes and parents don't know about, that, you know, at all levels of college football, there's a certain subset of athletes that get recruited to play for a certain school, and either they don't continue with college all the way through the end, they don't continue with football all the way through the end, or they don't continue with college or football at that school all the way through the end. And that's really what you're talking about when you say retention, is there's guys that are starting in the program, not graduating as a senior, playing college football in that same program, right? And that those are the guys, really seniors and juniors, those are the guys that help you win games, championships. You know, the freshmen, sophomores, like, they can contribute. Sometimes you get a dynamic one, but usually, you know, you can count up the amount of freshmen that you have playing for you, and that's a pretty good indicator of how many games you're going to lose that year. So,
yeah.
You know, you want to have an older, you know, more seasoned team, because, you know, the longer they're in the program, the more they understand, the better they are, the better shape they're in, you know, the better football players they become because they've just continued to get coached. So, help explain that dynamic, that, you know, what causes poor retention or good retention and how that works at your school.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing. And it's something that every year a good program and good coaches will kind of sit back and reflect on and say, what are some things that we can do to help our retention? So some of the things that obviously impact retention, and I'll speak from our standpoint, but it's probably very relatable to a lot of Division III schools. WLC is a very high academic school. So our guys are coming in, and sometimes we lose guys in the program, but they stay at our school and they're pre-med or they're a nursing major or they're something else. And they realize, hey, my commitment to my major and my program is so great that it's really hard for me to balance that and where I want to go for grad school or beyond and football. So we've got a handful of guys that it's great. They're still on our campus and we're close with them because we recruited them. But they just decided football, you know, at the Division III level, it was something that they didn't want to have to manage with their future career and things that were maybe overlapping there. So that happens a lot of times with retention, but that's fine, you know, and we expect that. And we are okay with that, obviously, because the number one reason they're there is to get their degree and build that foundation for their future. Other times, you got guys that come in, like we talked about before, if you have a really large incoming freshman class, you're gonna have a lot of competition for playing time. You're going to have guys that maybe are comparing themselves to the guy across from them saying, why are those reps going there and not here? So sometimes it comes strictly down to, I'm not playing as much as I thought I would as a freshman in college. And sometimes that's what we try to avoid during the recruiting process, is by being open and transparent with them. On defense, our defensive coordinator, the first night of camp when we do our meetings, he asks all the guys in the room, including juniors and seniors, he goes, all right, guys, we're going to be eventually going to scout teams and scout preps at some point in camp here. All of my guys, and by that point it's established, the young guys know who the big dogs are in the room, right? They know who the seniors are. They know who the starters are. They've seen the highlights. They've seen them out in the field, do a couple walkthroughs, stuff like that. They know who the number one defense is coming back. Our coach will say, how many of you guys that are ones right now were on the scout team your freshman year? And every one of them raises their hand. So he kind of sets that expectation right off the bat too. One of the hardest things, and I can relate to it, is the fact that when you're going to a Division III school, you're not receiving that athletic scholarship, right? So you're really there for the passion of the game and you just love playing that sport. That's how I was when I was playing at that level. I went through tearing three ACLs when I was a college football player. And I'll tell you what, after the first and second one and third one, I questioned whether or not I was going to come back and play the next year. The first one happened my freshman year after the season. I didn't even know if I was going to come back for my sophomore year period at that school. Guys get hurt, and it's just a reality of football, especially when you're looking at a sport. So if we can get our guys committed and involved in multiple things, we call them like sticky points on campus, that helps us big time. So if it's their major, great. If it's an internship and a job opportunity area, awesome. If it's a club or organization that they're running, great. We got to get our guys involved in more than just athletics at WLC, because we know at any point, whether it's a rolled ankle and a high ankle sprain that keeps you a couple weeks and that can get you down, or if it's a torn ACL that you're rehabbing for a year, sometimes the sport can be taken away just like that. So when we're recruiting guys, we want to make sure that WLC really is a good fit for them culturally and everything else, because we know at any moment football might go away for a season or two.
Yeah, and it sounds like you guys are doing a great job with, you know, that. I like that sticky point concept with retention. I think that makes a lot of sense. But it sounds like you guys are doing a great job. But I bet even doing a great job, I bet if you told me the percentage of athletes that come in as freshmen but don't stay on the team all the way till senior year would probably surprise a lot of high school seniors and their parents. So, like, could you give me a rough sense of what percentage you think, you know, either way, what percentage get retain all the way to the end and what percentage drop out?
Yeah, no, that's a great thing. You're right. They probably would be surprised, because if you're looking at a incoming class of this year, say 45 or 50 guys, having 20 seniors in 4 years from now would be a huge number. So we're talking what, under a 50% clip sometimes. And that's just because of all those different factors. And some of them are controllable and some of them aren't, where guys are no longer on the team 4 years from now or graduating 4 years from now. Our year that we won the conference championship 3-4 years ago, we had 26 seniors on our roster. And that was the largest number that our head coach ever had at any program that he coached in across the country. So those are big numbers when you get up into the 20s for seniors, especially when you only have a roster of about 100. So if you think about that, your senior class is going to usually be the minority on the team just by the way things happen with retention and the trickle down. So if you get a large senior class, this year we're right around 20. That's a good number for us, and they're good guys. That's when you can tell the level, like you said. The more freshmen you're playing, usually you can tell where your season's going to go. The more seniors, juniors you have on your team, that's where you know you're going to have a successful team and you're going to have a healthy locker room throughout the season.
Yeah, and I always say, like, it's safe to say that every team is going to have, usually, like most teams, are going to have somewhere between 15 and at the very top, like 30 seniors on their roster. And so if a coach is telling you that they're bringing in a freshman class of 60 or 70 or 80 or 90, that means that there's like less than a 1 in 3 chance that you're going to still be at that school. Because the reality is like people can only look at the depth chart and see that they're like 9th on the depth chart at a position for so long before they just say, this isn't worth it for me. You know, unless they really just love being a part of the team, and you get those guys too. But for a lot of athletes, especially ones that are playing college football, where in high school, they're just used to being better than everyone else. Yep. They get to college, they're not better than everyone else. And they realize that they're going to have to work incredibly hard just for a whiff at a chance to play by the time they're a junior or a senior. And that doesn't sit well with a lot of athletes.
No, you're right. You know, our coaches will say, hey, all of you guys are the best guys on your high school football team to our incoming freshmen. Like, look around, take yourself and whatever your all-star team was in your county or your city or your conference. And that's who you're playing with here. And that's who you're coming in with. And it's great because you guys are going to push each other to be competition. But yeah, you aren't going to be the guy that just gets all the touches or all the carries, because everyone here is pretty much your peer and equal. So that's a really good point. And like you said, some guys, they just want to be part of that atmosphere and they're going to stick that out. And if they stick it out to 4 years and they develop and they get in the weight room and they come to spring ball and they do all the things that they need to do, our commitment to them is we're going to make you into a football player by that time that you're serviceable to be playing, you know, by your senior year, whether it's you're a third down player, whether you're our special teams MVP or whether you're doing something, but you're going to be on the field at some point if you put in the work and you commit to a program for 4 years. That's why we love our seniors so much, and we just give them a lot of credit. And we tell our young guys, to be seniors in a college football program is no easy task. It's not easy. And we're transparent about that. Like, to get to this point, you're going to have a lot of ups and downs, whether it is an injury, whether it's a class that you had one semester that really gave you a hard time and stressed you out during the football season. You just were struggling with that. Whether it's at some point saying, I got to pick up an extra job to help pay for tuition, you know, at school, or pay for my books this semester. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with these guys. So you make it through to your senior year playing college football, especially at the Division III level. You got a lot of commitment to that. And we got a lot of respect for our guys that can make it there.
You know, looking back on my career as a coach, I spent, you know, quite a few years as a special teams coordinator at Division I level. And when I was in that position, I just like regret that I didn't do more to take those guys and get them on the field in special teams. You know, I was probably, you know, at the time I was trying to set the tone that special teams was for everyone. And a lot of like the stars, you know, the natural instinct is like, once I become a starter, then I don't play special teams anymore. I was trying to kill that mentality that is for everyone. And I think in doing so, I ended up not really taking advantage of like that really hungry walk-on type guy that was just going to go out there. And even if him at his best wasn't as good as someone else at their best, you were guaranteed to get that best out of them on that one play or those, you know, 10 plays a game. And getting that best out of them would have like made the difference. I wish I had done more to help those guys get on the field.
Well, it's something that you have to balance, because I know exactly what you're talking about. We do the same thing. The first day we do special teams in camp, we've got all of our, well, typically, you know, say kickoff or whatever, we've almost got like our number one defense out there. and we show the young guys this is important, and we set that tone and say, yeah, he's our starting middle linebacker, but he's also going to be our gunner on kickoff because this is really important. And then we gradually kind of move some of those younger guys in as we see where the reps are kind of panning out in camp and say, well, they're not getting a lot of reps at this position, but they have this specific skill set. We can put them at this spot on this special team, and it's not a big drop off from, say, our starting free safety who's already playing 70 defensive snaps a game. Like, this will be great for him to be fresh and come in on these plays, and it'll give this guy a breather. But we set the tone that our starters are on this to start, and then you got to kind of earn a spot to take one from them almost. So it's a dance. You gotta set the tone for that and then bring those guys in. And it's tough to do sometimes because you look at it and say, man, I really want to get this guy involved somewhere because he's a great kid, but he just hasn't developed yet exactly where we want him to be. And it might be halfway through the season, so he gets to that point. But halfway through a football season as a freshman in college is a long time when you consider there's a 2 or 3 week camp, and then you got another 5 weeks before you might be sniffing, getting some playing time, or you're on the travel roster or anything. I mean, we're talking 8 weeks. That's 2 months of being in a place that maybe you don't know anyone and you were used to playing football every week, and it took you 2 months to even kind of sniff reps, which can be tough for a lot of guys.
Yeah, I think that is reality. A lot of times athletes and their families, they ask me, like, first of all, like, how do I get colleges to notice me? How do I get, once I figure out, like, I get 5 schools recruiting me, how do I pick what school it is that I actually like and want to go to? And I always like ask them to take a step back and ask themselves, do they love playing football? Like, they have to love it so much that they're willing to undergo so much hardship, because that's what college football is. College football is hard. And if you don't love it, then you're not going to make it. You know, like, no matter really how talented you are, if you don't love it, especially at the Division III level, I think at Division I level, sometimes, you know, if you're on scholarship, sometimes you cannot love it for a year or a half a year. And the fact that you're on scholarship will just keep you going long enough to turn over and get over the hump. Yep. But you got to love it. And otherwise, you're in big trouble.
No, you're 100% correct. I'll talk to our families. We'll have larger visit days for all of our athletes, our incoming potential freshman athletes, so seniors in high school, sometimes even juniors. They'll come with their families on what we call sometimes discovery days. And I'll talk to all the athletes' families, whether it's soccer, basketball, football, et cetera, just from a general standpoint of, hey, I'm an alum. I played college sports here at WLC. Here's what it is and what it means to be a Warrior athlete. And I tell them, it is so hard to be a college athlete. And then I see a lot of the parents in the room who probably were college athletes, and their heads go up and down. And they nod too. And they're kind of smiling like, it is. It's hard. You have a time commitment for these things. You have struggles that you're going to have in college. You might be coming from a high school where you were a 3-5 student, and then you get your first C ever in college because it's a college course and you just weren't expecting that. And that can be devastating for you, even though you're still maybe pulling off a 3-0 in college. You're used to getting a 3-5 and all A's and B's, and that can be shaking you. So even the guys that you say, hey, we shouldn't have to worry about this guy. He was a really great student. He's a good football player. He's a good kid. Those guys, I mean, I was one of them. I even struggled with some of those things, saying my expectations sometimes aren't met at certain points in my college career, which I can just get down on, because an 18 to 22 year old is going through a lot of things socially, being away at college, you're away from your family, and then all the other things that come in academically. And then you're starting to worry about, hey, what's the next step after this, and laying that foundation for the rest of your life. It's a lot to put on 18 to 22 year olds. So we just try to put in a lot of the things and resources for our guys and our athletes in general, understanding this is really hard. Take pride in what you're doing, because not everyone can do it.
Yeah. And you talked a little bit about your story, which I thought was interesting. We've talked a little bit about it before, where you came out of high school and you had a brother, same age, same school. You recruited to play Division III football. He was recruited to play Division I football. And so I think that like gives you like this interesting perspective on the differences from like a going through it experience. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that, you know, how that played out and you know, what your takeaway was?
Yeah. So my brother being recruited by Division I programs, Big Ten programs, et cetera, in the Midwest here, was obviously a lot different experience than me being recruited by a Division III program. And a lot has even changed since then at both levels, I think, with recruiting. Well, I know a lot has changed. I would say that the Division III level, the recruiting and the process has really stepped up, and it's amped up a lot from when I was being recruited at that level. At that time, it was, you know, your direct mail, a few phone calls here and there, get over for a visit. And then, you know, at that time, if it's a high school senior 10 years ago, I was maybe applying to four or five schools, maybe not even, to see what I got into and what my financial aid packages were like. Now students at the Division III level are applying to so many more schools. It's easier to do with online applications. Typically, those applications are free. You can have your test scores and your transcripts sent everywhere. So you really have to be recruiting these guys a lot harder at the Division III level, I think, now. So you're going on a lot more visits. You're now have no limits on a lot of the texts that you can send these guys and when you can send these texts. So there's a lot more communication going on that I didn't have. Now I look at my brother being recruited and eventually attending Michigan State. The big things for those guys at that time, you know, obviously were their official visits, you know, going on the campus, going to game day visits. So I remember going to a lot of the games with him as he was being recruited and kind of just checking out the campus, checking out the weight rooms, being on the field during games and things like that. Those had a huge impact. But I can say even from when we were in high school and as seniors, I want to say, man, when we were seniors in high school, I don't even know if I had like free texting. So, you know, like now you shoot guys texts and you do all this stuff and you don't even think it's iMessage or whatever. And there's Twitter going on and all this. It's like back then we didn't have Twitter. I don't even think we had texting. So I'm looking at his experience and going, wow, what he went through is even way different than what a Division III guy is going through now, which is just crazy where college athletics has gone since then. But his experience was, yeah, a lot more intense than mine. But obviously both have stepped up since 10 years ago.
And he went to Michigan State, right? Do I have that right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And what went into your decision to go to Wisconsin Lutheran over? I imagine there were some other choices. And what went into his decision to go to Michigan State over other choices?
Yeah. So for me, I mean, I even looked at Michigan State just as a school to go to for academics. I was looking to go into business and have a good business program there. And I said, hey, I could go to school with my brother, follow his career, be here, hang out, have a really good time. I also looked at some other schools in Michigan. What ended up happening for me personally, why I decided to go to Wisconsin Lutheran College is one, obviously to play college football, but it wasn't always the main driver for me, which is interesting because athletics a lot of times is for students that are going out of state to attend school to places they don't know and things like that.
If I was recruiting you, if I had heard you say that, I would have immediately stopped recruiting you. That would have been the sign that this guy's probably not going to make it. But obviously there's exceptions to that, those kind of rules too.
There is. And I would think with mine, I have a little bit unique background. So my mom and dad were both called workers and they were Lutheran educators growing up. So I grew up going to Lutheran K-8 school. My mom was my kindergarten teacher. My dad was my principal K-8. So I had an affinity with private education or a Lutheran specifically education, even though I went to a public high school. In a million years, did I think I would be going to a Lutheran college? No, I didn't even know Wisconsin Lutheran College existed. And so an old pastor called my dad, who they're friends with, and said, hey, Trey should come over to Milwaukee, where I'm living now, and come check out Wisconsin Lutheran College. They got a football team. The coaches would like to talk to him. So it was one of those, I think, perfect storm things. And it was really unique to look back on. But like I said, when I came over to Milwaukee, the thing that drew my attention was I wanted to go into business and I wanted to be a finance major. And I looked at the big U.S. bank buildings and all these other companies that were based in Milwaukee. And I said, this is really cool. This isn't too big of a place where I feel overwhelmed, but it's a large enough place where I feel like I'm getting out of my small hometown and I'm going to have a lot of opportunities here. So I actually picked Wisconsin Lutheran College based on a couple things outside of football. One was the career opportunities that I would have. And two, it was my financial aid package. Division III schools can't give out athletic scholarships, but if you have good grades, you're going to get some pretty good merit in academic scholarships. And I was one of those students. So it was actually more affordable for me to go out of state to a private school than it would be to attend Michigan State, a state school in state, an hour and a half away. So that was one of the big decisions for me. For Trenton, for my brother, him going to Michigan State, I just know that when he got that letter, I remember when he got the letter from Michigan State, you know, kind of saying they were officially recruiting him. I just remember him opening them because I remember sitting by him when he opened different letters from different schools and his eyes just lit up with that one. So we grew up rooting for Michigan State and things like that. So that was more of a, I think like a childhood dream thing for him. And he would probably confirm that. And then when that happened, and I think our recruiting visit that we went to was the Michigan State game that year. And we were on the sideline and that was the year, man, Michigan had Hart and Mallett and Henny and Long and all those guys. And they're a top five team. And Michigan State was just on the come up. That was Coach D'Antonio's first year, and they won that game. And I remember that being kind of like the solidifying experience for us. So that was probably a big factor in it for him. But I think Coach D and his recruiting coach at that time, Coach Narduzzi, who's now the head coach at Pitt, those were the guys that you ever the relationships with. And as you know from being a college football and being a recruiter, it really comes down to those relationships with your position coaches or your recruiting coaches during that process. Who do you feel comfortable with? Who do you feel is being genuine? Who do you feel that you're just going to be able to be part of their family and they're going to take care of you type of thing? And I think that's what it came down to for both of us, actually.
Okay. And were you looking at other schools to play football at, or was it just the Wisconsin Lutheran was the only one that you were considering playing football at?
I was looking at a few others, not as in-depth. I didn't have as many in-depth conversations with the coaches in Michigan. Like I said, the MIAA schools, some of those other Division III schools, even some of the D2 schools in Michigan. But I didn't have the conversations or go in-depth because, like I said before, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to play college football. I remember talking to my high school coach about it, and I was kind of doubting myself a bit. I came from a high school team that we won a conference championship, and we went to semis for states my junior year, and I was playing with a lot of good high school athletes that went on and played at a lot of different levels. So I played and started for my college football team, but by no means was I one of our best players, and I'd be the first to admit that. So in my mind, I was thinking, well, I'm not good enough to play college football. And I sat down with my high school coach, and I remember him showing me pictures of his son actually playing in the MIAA over in Michigan at the Division III level and saying, Trey, you can play at this level. I want to let you know, like, you can play at this level. You should take this visit. When I was telling him about Wisconsin Lutheran College, you should take the time and go visit them. Go over there and go check out a game and talk to the coaches, because I wasn't even sure if I wanted to do that. You know, at that time, as a high school senior, you really don't even want to go visit the colleges. You just kind of see it as a hassle. Your parents are kind of dragging you along to do that stuff. And then the last thing I want to do is drive 7 hours to a different state, have to stay overnight and go check out a football game when I could just hang out with my buddies on the weekend. So I kind of got talked into that by my high school coach, which I think was a big factor in him just giving me the confidence that, hey, you can do this. You can show up there and you can play college football. And I'm really glad that I did that, because it was the best 4 years of my life. Even after tearing three ACLs and coming back from each one each year, it was the best decision I ever made.
That's such a life-changing conversation. I hope you go back and you tell your high school coach, you know, that you've had that reaction to it, so he's encouraged to have that more often with more athletes.
Yeah, he was actually at my wedding last summer. I was with him this summer. I was actually talking to his son. I remember telling his son that story this summer. We follow each other on Twitter, him, his son and I, and we always go back and forth and stuff. I said, hey, did you know the only reason I'm even over in Wisconsin, one of the reasons is you? And we had that conversation, which is really cool. And my high school coach just retired this last year after coaching for like 30 plus years. And both my brother and I had a really good relationship with him. He was at both our weddings this last year, and he was a huge impact on us. And it's one of those things where I looked out into the crowd at my wedding, and I looked at my brother's crowd during his wedding, and you see, you know, your high school coach and your college coach sitting there, and it's just a really cool thing where you're saying, man, what I'm doing as a college coach, sometimes I might underestimate the impact I might be having on some of these guys' life, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now.
Yeah, you just blew my mind right there. I was like, just thinking about all the high school coaches that are listening to this podcast and hopefully getting inspired by their ability to shape and, you know, move kids in like this great direction. And then you just said it right there at the end. It's like, I didn't even like look back and think about how I probably had that impact at some level, hopefully on a bunch of athletes.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's great. Did you ever consider, was it even an option walking on at Michigan State, or was that not really on the radar?
Not on the radar for me, just where I was at from a talent standpoint and ability. One of the coolest things for me in my career when I was playing at the Division III level, I ended up being an all-conference player at that level. And it was really cool because our hometown did a really good job on keeping up with all of us when we went off and played our college sports. And like I said, I came from an athletic-rich graduating class in the 2 years at our high school. So we had guys that are kind of all over the place playing college sports. And I remember people sending me clippings from the newspaper of that week, and they kind of do a rundown of all of our updates from our games. And I remember one week, my name and my picture was kind of at the top of what are your guys doing at the different level. And obviously then it had like Trenton and stuff at the Big Ten, but I said, this is really cool. I felt so proud to be a college athlete, even at the Division III level. And then knowing that my brother was playing at the Division I level, my bye weeks, I'd always go to his games, whether he was playing over in the Midwest somewhere in an away game, or I'd go back to Michigan State and watch him play. I never missed a bowl game that they were in, and I became such a fan of his. But it was cool to think, man, these guys are my age going through the same thing. But man, look at, they're playing in front of 70,000 people. How crazy is that? And then I think about the time that they have to put in practice and all these other things. They don't have the luxury to do an internship like I did or have a part-time job because of the demand that they have at that level. So during our time being college athletes, I kind of took a point or a stance where I really began to respect these Division I athletes and all of the stuff that they put in at their programs. And sometimes what gets overlooked there is, you know, the big debates these days are, you know, should you pay these Division I athletes at that level and stuff? And, you know, as long as you're taking care of them, that's all I care about. These guys aren't able to do these part-time jobs. And I remember going to visit my brother, even at Michigan State, where you're on a full ride, and his apartment building he's living in that's on campus, you know, has lawn chairs in it, you know, as their furniture, or a TV that doesn't work, or an empty fridge. And I always thought, going through that experience and seeing that, man, this is crazy. They're filling 70,000 person stadiums, and I'm over here living better at my Division III school, you know? So it was just kind of eye-opening for me, and I have a huge respect for those guys. I could have never done it at that level, probably. I know the demand that they had, but what a cool thing to be part of for him. But I'm really happy with my experience, too.
Yeah, and I know you have your own podcast. I forget the name. If you could plug it here.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the All Over Podcast. That's All Over Pod. It's on Apple iTunes, and we're on Twitter, too, as well, at All Over Pod.
Yeah, and you guys touch subjects, I think, kind of like that on there, where you talk about sports and, I guess, a lot of, like, the rougher edges around it about, like, what's going on with the NCAA. And sounds like you have some opinions on that, and how the NCAA handles those things. What do you think? Do you think that the NCAA is making changes in the right direction, or not fast enough, or not at all? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I'm obviously in a unique position because I am a coach, albeit, you know, an assistant coach at an NCAA school. So I work for an NCAA, you know, affiliated school, but at the top level, I've seen the dollars and the things that are coming into these programs, and I've had a hard time over the last couple of years understanding some of the policies of the NCAA or how they've treated some of these guys that want to transfer out of programs other places, and how much they protect their coaches and their administrators in their pocketbooks, but tend to overlook some of these players at times. The biggest thing that I've come to in my stance on things over, I think, probably the past 10 years, and I've done, man, a lot of research on this. I remember when I was in undergrad and even grad school, a lot of my papers and research and capstone projects, some of these things were around this topic, was the whole fact and point of amateurism in college athletics. I think that paying these players, people always kind of go that way, even the NCAA, because I think they want to control that narrative of, well, we can't pay everybody. And most people would agree with that, including me. You can't pay people and cut them a check at that level because of a lot of the regulations, Title IX, things like that. And some of the programs, you know, aren't making any money. It's just a very few in very few sports. But my biggest thing and my take, and it's been my stance, and I don't see it changing at any point, is the fact that I think amateurism should be eliminated at the college level. Which what that means for college athletes and people that don't really know is college athletes are considered amateurs, so they can't make money off their likeness or their name. If you were to eliminate amateurism, you wouldn't have to pay anybody. You wouldn't even have to cut a check. All these schools could still collect their money from the Big Ten Network or any of their TV partners, all their sponsors, whether it's Nike or the people, the vendors that they have in their stadium and everything else that they're doing, the advertisers. All that money still comes into them to help promote their other athletic programs and all the other great things that this money is doing on college campuses across the country. But what you do allow a guy to do is not get suspended for getting a free taco at Taco Bell after the game. Or if a guy does have a name, an awareness around his name, maybe he can go sign some autographs on the weekend at a car dealership. And while he's in school, he gets a free lease on a car so he can drive around campus or get to a class on a large campus there and have some of those perks. Those are the things that I think are just overstepping and really trying to control everything at the NCAA level. And I'm hoping at some point some of those things will change. But like you said, I think they are taking some steps in some areas. If you look at college basketball and some of the things that have come through in this last year with the investigations there and all that, they're trying to control that a little bit more. Regulated agents for high school players coming into college basketball and things like that for the top players. I see that as a step, but also it's a little bit of window dressing when the real issue here is amateurism. And like I said, if you eliminate amateurism, I think a lot of the issues go away here. But sometimes solutions are just too easy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you open up a door for like a quid pro quo where it's, you know, if you go and sign at Michigan, then they know that there's a car dealer around the corner that will let you go there and sign autographs for $100,000, right? Or whatever it is.
Yep.
And then that just becomes part of the recruiting game. It might as well be the schools just paying the players. I don't know how you stop that or control that at some level. I mean, I've heard some other ideas, but I don't know, it seems like just opening up that gate. I mean, now you could just say that it's okay, schools should pay players what they're worth, and it should be an open labor market. And I mean, that is a solution. I don't know if it's the right one. I think that you got to, you know, and all these solutions, I think that there's pluses and minuses. I'm not so sure that the minuses of this system are worse than the minuses of some of these other proposals, but
right.
You know,
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it's hard. It's easy to see the solution that fixes the problems of this one, but I don't know if it always pops the problems that are around the corner.
I totally agree. There's always going to be something. When you're talking about billion-dollar industries, there's going to be something going on that there's going to be problems with, right? I mean, it's hard to regulate any industry that's bringing in that much money, whether it's financial, whether it's college athletics, anything. Now, I know what you said, well, if Michigan's got this car dealership that these guys know they can come and sign autographs for X amount of money, that's going to give them an advantage. Well, it's no different than Alabama building a $50 million facility with the profits they have and having better facilities than anyone. Or the fact that Nick Saban says, if you come play for me, here's all the signing bonuses my guys have gotten this last year in the NFL. Like, I'm basically going to prepare you for a check in a couple years. So the top schools that have the large alum bases or the fan bases that are bringing in revenue, or that are splitting revenue from these college networks on TV for TV deals, they're going to be keeping to pump their money into something, whether it's relationships with these companies in the area or whether it's their own facilities. But these guys are getting stuff, and there's a competition and an arms race going on regardless. It's just controlled by everyone but the players. So I guess I'm just a little bit more on that side where if we could level out some of that control or that power, I'd have a better feeling about that. But you're right. You're always going to have something where there's going to be a backdoor or even a black market for some of this stuff. But the more I thought we could bring to light or just make more transparent and help regulate and just see out in the open, the better everyone else would feel about it. Because I think it's these backdoor deals or things that are happening that really get people feeling weird about college athletics at times. And if you just put it all out there, maybe that would just help the persona around it or the stigma that it has.
Well, I'd love to continue on with this conversation. We should get you back on the podcast. I know you're running low on time. You got a team over in Michigan that you guys got to wallop in a few hours. So I'm going to cut that part of the conversation off and pick it up some other time. But one other question I want to ask you, I always want to ask college coaches when they come on the podcast, what are high school athletes and their parents doing wrong in the recruiting process? What could they do to improve their odds of finding the right school, getting recruited by that school, and having a great college football career?
I think you hit on it right there. Them finding the right school, the right fit for them. If you're a college athlete or you're a high school athlete and you want to play college athletics, you will have no shortage of opportunities. I will tell you that right now. The best things that you can do as a high school student or parent is make sure that you go out and you need to figure out what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So a lot of times, especially if this is a son of yours or a daughter who's a high school athlete trying to play college athletics, if it's your first going out of your kids, you don't know what the checklist of items that you want in a college are until you start visiting them. So what I tell our guys, even after they come on campus with us, if we're the first time they visit somewhere, I tell them you need to go and visit at least 5 more schools. Whether you're going and talking with the football coaches there or not, you need to get on 5 campuses at least outside of us to figure out what are the things on your checklist that matter. And you don't know that until you're on a campus. You don't know that you really value having nice res halls until you see 5 different ones. And you realize that 3 of them are living in a closet and 2 of them have a lot of room and I could feel comfortable coming back here and doing my homework every night. You don't even value things like the food on the campus. And so you taste that, the facilities, and then talking to people like professors, coaches, and other individuals that are going to be important to your academic success there. So the number one suggestion I have for families is do your homework, start visiting schools early, and figure out what that checklist is of must-haves at a school. Because until you create that, you're really just going to be thinking about one thing only, and that might be playing college football. Once you get there, though, what happens to all those other things? The sticky things that I talked about earlier that are going to keep you there and persist and retain through, that's what you need to do as a high school athlete or parent, is get out there and see what are the things that you value in a school, and make sure at the end of the day, when you make that decision, you feel good about it and say, you know what, I did my homework. They're consumers, essentially, Nate. They're savvy consumers, and you need to do your homework. You don't want to have buyer's remorse when you buy a car or anything else, right? So when you're picking a college, you want to make sure that you did your homework, so that first night, I tell our guys in camp, when you're laying in bed and you're really sore after we put on pads for the first day, you wake up the next morning, you look at that ceiling, and you go, man, I'm really glad I'm here. And you're not thinking, what the heck am I doing here?
And do you think it's fair to say that athletes and their parents are focused too much on the question of, like, how do I get noticed by the school I already know about, as opposed to how do I find out more information about all the schools that are out there that are really, like, interested in, you know, recruiting me?
Yeah, I think so. I think that if there's schools that are on your radar already, especially from an athletic standpoint, don't worry so much about, hey, I'm going to sell this coaching staff on recruiting me. You need to make sure you're selling yourself on that school and that it's meeting all your stipulations. You're the one. And it's the same as I tell our guys that are going in for interviews when they graduate or right after graduation. I said, when you go in for this interview tomorrow, don't be super nervous and just try to sell yourself. You're doing that, but you also need to make sure that they're a good fit for you. It's got to be a two-way street here. So make sure that you're asking questions and doing things that make sure that you're going to be happy while you're at that job or that college. So it's the same strategy we give our guys when they're going in for interviews and things like that. Parents and high school students need to make sure that when they're looking at schools, they're figuring out the things outside of athletics. And I would say when you're on that visit and I have parents ask me questions about, hey, what are the study table options for guys academically to help them through their first semester? What are some of the struggles they have? What are some of the resources you have here that are going to help them with, adjusting the college life? And they ask me a lot of those questions. I sit there and I say, you know what? You're going to be successful here. And I'll actually recruit that kid harder than the kid that only wants to talk about football the whole time on the visit, because I'm thinking you're going to have the sticky points. You're going to be successful here. You're going to do what you need to do, even if you roll your ankle the first practice of the season or out half the year.
Love it. Well, thanks a lot. And it's a pleasure having you on, and we'll do this again.
Awesome, Nate. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you, Trey. Well, thanks for listening. Trey was a great guest, gave us a lot of good information. Going to keep on having on more and more college coaches. I just know that this is the information that high school athletes and their parents need. So please, if you know anyone, or even if you don't, put it on your social media, share this thing out. Let's get this in the hands of high school athletes and their families and even high school coaches, so they can learn a little bit more about the recruiting process, go into it a little bit more educated, and have success. I mean, this is the first big decision that most athletes, you know, high school seniors are going to take, is where am I going to go to college? It's even harder for, you know, athletes. So let's get this out to them. And if you find the content valuable, consider donating to us on our Patreon page so we can keep on producing great content. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.